Man, we'll do anything around here for a laugh. That's for sure. Hey, I want to end up today's series and just do a quick recap. Obviously, if you could take anything from what just happened, David has no idea what the series was about. And so hopefully you've gotten a little more out of it than that. Week one, what we talked about is that God wants us to break away from the old cycle of worshiping different gods and doing things that are predictable and living in safety to follow him on a radical adventure of what is called real life, the life that God has planned for us. And what God did when he called Abraham away from the wheel life into the real life was he showed him over and over again, and we talked about in week two, that he is a giving God, that it's just his character, it's his nature, that no matter what we do, no matter how we perform, that God gives. He's benevolent. He just loves to give. It's in his nature. He hands things out to us, and it's not always the things that we want, or it's not things that we can just request, and then he gives. But if we listen to what he said he'll give and what he's promised he'll give, then we can bank and depend our entire lives on that. And then in week three, last week, we talked about how the story of Moses, as the people of Israel grew and ended up in slavery, that the story of Moses is about one word. It's about the word dependence. And God showed us that if we depend upon him, that it's the beginning of deliverance, that if we actually lean on him and rely on him and do what he says and reach out to him in new ways, that that's the beginning of whatever kind of new cycle we might end up in, even though we are in a relationship with God. And so today, I just want to close up our series, and I want to encourage everyone that is here that to go watch this series, to spend some time diving into this series. If you're in the room and you want to hear more, there's a book that I based this series on called The Gift of the Jews by Thomas Cahill, and you should go read that book. He's a Jewish scholar, and you do not want to miss some of the extra stuff that he brings forth. I think it would be a great summer read for you. It's not a difficult read. The first chapter is a little difficult. It's about like history before Abraham and Gilgamesh and all this stuff, so you might get drowned out in that, but just keep going. It's really, really powerful. During the summertime, we all, especially as parents, experience something that I recall as a child now looking back, and it's this phenomenon that takes place whenever you're going to go somewhere, right? Whenever you get into the car, no matter what it is. My house is less than a mile from Dairy Queen. And I will tell my kids, we are going to Dairy Queen. And as soon as we get in the car, like we're in the neighborhood, they ask this question, are we there yet? And it's like, we haven't even left yet. And then of course, how many people are getting ready to like get the family truckster together and go on a trip and drive somewhere south? Anybody got that in their plans for the summer? Raise your hand. Just four of you, okay. Well, never mind. Just come back for the next series. We all have gone through this, and I remember as a kid just that pain, right? We used to drive to Colorado. That's a long trip, man. Kansas, woo, brutal. But I remember being in Kansas, driving through Kansas, and then getting to the Kansas-Colorado line and getting to that place where you think, like, oh, we're in Colorado now, so everything's different. It's not. It's not. Kansas looks exactly like Colorado for another several hundred miles until, boom, the big rocks shoot out of the ground past Denver. So if you're in Kansas, you're there forever, and you want to do things to your siblings, and you want to jump out of the car, and, I mean, crazy stuff happens. You pee in places you shouldn't. I mean, it just happens, right? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And then Colorado state line, and more of the same. I mean, it's brutal, and we've all been to this place. We've all been to this place where we're wondering when we're going to get there. We're wondering when we're going to get there. And oftentimes on a journey, when we're traveling, we have a hard time focusing on the goodness of that journey. And when I think back to some of those journeys, particularly some of the long drives like that we used to do out west, I look back and I have some amazing memories of those times. I remember one time my dad had just got the new Chevy, I think it was called Lumina, Chevy Lumina, is that right? Like that? And it was like the new car. And my dad said, when we were driving, he said, you know, this car is special. I'm like, what's special about this car? I'm like, the name is cool, and it had this kind of space name. And he said, this car is the first car that could hover. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. And I just look back on this moment. I think about how fortuitous this was for my dad to build this thing up. He said, this car can hover. And I said, well, how do you do that? And he said, this button right here. You press this button and it can hover. And I was like, oh my gosh. And he goes, and I went to go. And he goes, just don't. And then he goes, are you ready? And I was like, yeah. And he hit the button and the car went and then went smooth because they had repaved the highway moving into Indiana. And so it was all bad, and then it was perfectly smooth. Like, it was like before the lines were on or anything. And I kid you not, man, I thought, we're hovering. We are hovering right now. And on top of that, the even better than that is I remember driving out west and my dad playing his music, and my dad would play Paul Simon, Graceland, and now it's the greatest record of all time. Like, that is my favorite record. Literally, when I hear that song, I am like taken to this place of heaven on earth in my heart. I don't know how to explain it, right? Like, when you have a song that's associated with great times, and when I hear that, and Paul Simon and the Mississippi Delta is shining like a national guitar, I'm like, oh. Oh, heaven on earth. I mean, that's just like Paul Simon, just speak to my soul, you sweet man. I mean, like, I promise you, like, it moves me. And here's the thing, is that the journey is supposed to be a part of life that we are supposed to engage. And oftentimes, we don't want to do that. And we have a really hard time engaging where we are. And in an article written in Psychology Today, they taught that the way that human brains are wired is very interesting, and there's a reason that we struggle to be present in whatever moment we're in. And what they teach in their own more sophisticated way is this, is that our brains are wired to learn and plan. Our brains are wired to learn and plan. Like, the way that God made you is to spend time in your neutral space mentally thinking about something that happened in the past, learning from the past, or where you're gonna go because of that. And so ultimately, it's extremely difficult for us as we go through life. We're thinking about the fears, the problems, what we figured out, what we didn't figure out. We're constantly living back there, running away from something as opposed to moving to something. And then because of all of that time that we spend thinking about what happened, we're planning how to do it differently. And so our brains kind of live in the, let me think about this and here's where I'm going. Let me think about this and here's what I'm going to do next. And let me think about this and here's how I'm going to do it better. Or let me think about this and I'm going to do it again that way. This is how we live. And ultimately, what we are kind of conditioned to do and what we slip into as humans is this idea that there's a destination that we're going to get to, and that's when life is going to start. Once we get to this place, once we get to Colorado, once we get through finals, once we get to college, once we get married, once we get the job, once we get to summer, think about it, once we get the promotion, I mean, we all constantly live in this, man, like, life has been this in the past, and I can't wait until we get there. And ultimately, most of us live in this idea that when we get there, life will start. Life will start. And so often we live in this kind of cycle, if you will, of just kind of living in the, okay, we're going to get there, we're going to get there. My wheels are turning. Here's what I don't want to happen. Here's what happened in the past. And eventually I'm going to get there. And when I get there, man, that's going to be home. That's going to be the promised land. I remember so many stories you can think of where you thought, like, once we get there, then it's when life will start. Two times we had the privilege to build new houses, and during those times we lived with my father-in-law, and we lived with him one time for 4 months and one time for 6 months. And I remember the feeling of like, when we get home, then we can start to live again, and how probably so many amazing things happened in that time with little kids, living with your in-laws, and they're great. I'm serious, like, it was great. I didn't have some, like, complex that's like, I gotta get out of here. Like, I had a great time, but I remember the feeling of, when we get there, life will start. I wonder how much I missed by thinking about where I was heading as opposed to focusing on what was happening right in the present. Maybe right now you're sitting there and you can't wait, right? Like you're afraid or you've learned a lesson or you're kind of living in something that's happened and all you're doing in your moment is you're gearing up towards whatever is coming. You just can't wait to get there. You just can't wait to get to that place, whatever that may be. And you might, it's funny, isn't it? With the kids, they get in the car and they think about Dairy Queen and we're like, dude, just be nice, watch the movie, whatever you say, like enjoy it for a second, like just buckle up and shut up. I mean, sorry, we're not supposed to say shut up, okay? That's what I tell my kids. So we're not supposed to say that, right? But you know, sometimes they need to. So it's like, but you tell them like enjoy the moment, right? But as adults, we're the same way. It's like we are in the car, we are going, when are we gonna get there? And that's when life will start. And the brutal reality of that is you all know, and no matter how many times we've done it, we end up there, and then what happens? It's the next place. And for some reason, our minds, we view that destination arrival as, well, now this was the problem, and I'm gonna learn from this and not do this again, and now I gotta go, what? Somewhere else. And so we kind of live in this cycle of, when we get there, life will start. When we get there, life will start. Then we get there, and it's like, now that's not life. And there's something else. And so think about the tragedy of continuing to live that way all the time. That no matter where you go, you're going, I can't wait to go somewhere else because I can't wait for life to start. What are the implications of that? That means that life never really starts in your heart. It means that life never really starts in your mind. It means that you're never fully present. It means that you're never fully engaging whatever is good and wonderful in the moment. And what I want to share with you as we kind of close out this series is we're talking about how we get caught in cycles. Patterns of behavior and thought patterns and worship patterns that God says, I'm gonna take you on a journey with me. And ultimately, when he makes promises, there are destinations associated with the promise, but God is so much bigger than just a destination. It's so much bigger. And the promise that he made when he said, break free of the wheel life and go to the real life, and he said, learn about me, I'm giving, and learn to depend upon me. What was he saying the whole time? He was saying that this thing I've called you to is not just a destination. This is a relationship. This is something that I'm inviting you to now, to have now, to experience now, right where you are, in the steps, in the transitions, in the waiting, in the moment, in the frustration. I'm there with you now, and I'm fully God now. And whenever you get to where you think you're going to be going and life is going to start, I'm going to be the same God then that I am now. So why don't you engage me on the trail and not just the peak? You see, what we all fall into is this idea that life will start when we get somewhere, but what God is saying through the story of the Israelite people as he formed them and shaped them and showed us who he was through them is that life is not about getting somewhere, but about getting God. You get God. You get him. He says, leave this wheel thing and just join the real God of heaven and earth and lock arms with him, and he is gonna be with you no matter where you go. You see, what we get locked into is this idea of promised lands. Think about that. God did go to Abraham and say, I'm going to promise you a land. And he also said, I'm gonna be your God, and you're gonna be my people, and I'm gonna be with you, and I'm gonna bless the whole world through you. And yes, you're going to get a location. And just like we would, most people, including Abraham, including Moses, focus more upon the destination than the interaction. Right? And so how many of us in our relationship with God are waiting for the promised land? Whatever that is in your mind, that the relationship with God will start once you reach some mile marker or some notch. What are those things in your relationship with God and your faith with God that are like, once I get there, then life will start? A couple of them that I think through that I hear from people and that I've experienced, our promised land can often be just salvation. And some of you are maybe new to the faith and you're going, man, you know, I don't know who God is and I don't understand, but I want to like get to that place where I'm saved and I feel my sins are forgiven and I feel like washed and clean and I have this faith and man, I just want that. And maybe you look at someone around you and you go, that person, they talk about salvation and I feel like I'm trapped or I feel like I'm lost and I want to be found. And some of you are in here and you remember when salvation was your promised land. It was the destination. When you got to salvation, that meant life was gonna start. And then some of you are in here and you got to that and you went, whoa, whoa, there's a whole lot more. Like, this is just the beginning, man. This is just the, hey, you wanna go on a walk? Yeah, now we got a whole thing to do here. And you're going, that's not the promised land. Just being introduced to Jesus, just being born again, that's not the promised land. And that's not what it's all about. It's about something so much bigger. It's not just about a moment. These kids are going to go to camp. They're going to have moments. You think that those moments, when I was at camp, we used to throw our stick in the fire. And that meant that you're saved. That meant you're giving your life to Jesus. Guess what? Every summer I went to camp, I threw a stick in the fire. So what does that mean? From camp one to camp two, what happened? It's supposed to be a journey. It's supposed to be a continuation. Supposed to be the continued growth, supposed to be the relationship blossoms and becomes different. But man, I wanted a salvation promised land. And then I stopped going to camp and stopped throwing my stick in the fire, and I still had to have and build a relationship with God. Don't get caught up in this idea that once you get to salvation, that now this thing is complete. That's just the beginning. Another one is no problems. Some of us are believing right now that you live in a world where there's these problems, and you go ahead and just put the fine print, the detail on those problems. What are those problems for you? They might be relationship problems. They might be health problems. They might be, you know, work problems or financial problems or parenting problems or you know, just think about whatever your problem is. And so many of us live in this belief that once my problems go away, then life will start. I got to get to the destination of no problems. Once that check comes in the mail, once that job happens, once I get that type of recognition, once I get through college, once I, this weekend, graduate, then, man, I got to get out of this school, and that's when life will start. And I promise you right now that if you look for this destination, no problems, for life to start with God, you're missing something right now. Another one is, no pain, right? Like, no pain. Like, there's no way that this could be life. And some of us are going, once the pain goes away, then my relationship with God can really take off. And some of you are sitting in here and you're going, man, I am so glad I had a dynamic relationship with God that grew, because one day in your story, pain showed up. And the strength of your relationship with God is what got you through it. And so many of us are waiting for the pain to go away so that we can build our relationship with God. God is a God of the journey, and he wants to meet you, and he's not going to take away all your problems, and he's not going to take all your pain away. That's not what it's about. Some of us are going, man, heaven, ultimately, just here's my life. I got saved. I got more problems, more money, more pain, whatever. I got all these problems. And eventually, I just want it to be done. To be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord. Like, you just want every tear to be wiped away as you sit in his lap on the throne like a child that's been broken. And you think that when you walk along the streets of gold and you look at the crystal sea, that you will feel life for the first time. And here's the reality, is that none of this is what the promise is about. Sure, some of these things happen. They weave in and out. And sure, you get heaven. But man, if you're waiting for heaven to be home, what are you missing on the journey right now? Because God made promises that transcend locations. Funny enough, when God made promises to Abraham and then a reminder to Moses that they would get the promised land, wouldn't you think, especially when it's defined in the first promise, that the promised land was a land flowing with milk and honey? That's right, that it would just be this beautiful place that is a place of their own. And
And that was a beautiful thing in a place, a time like that when there were kings and nations, and to have our own nation and have our own name and our own identity with our own God is a big deal. And once we get into Canaan, man, wow, then this will be. But when you read the story, you realize that the promised land, in fact, did not bring what they thought life should be about. When they look at the story, just to summarize it, the promised land that Israel experienced once they go into Canaan after the life and death of Moses, a couple of things really define what happened in that promised land. War and death. I mean, as soon as they go into the promised land, they have to fight off all these other tribes. They have to fight giants. War. Thousands of Israelites die and they have to fight battles. This is with children around, normal life, survival, eating, drinking, sleeping. Very real war happened in this destination that they were looking for. When they got to this promised land, they were confused. Is God with us? Because we just lost this battle and now we have this wayward leader at times and now we have this situation and where are we supposed to go? And you think, man, when I get there, man, everything will be clear and there'll be no more fighting. And sure enough, as soon as they got in there, there was fighting and there was confusion. And you think, hey, once I get there, God, you'll be my number one God. Like, I'll worship you. What happens with the Israelites is once they go into the promised land, eventually they start worshiping other gods. A little bit further into the promised land, God gave them a king. And it's a whole story about getting a king. God told them, you don't want a king. They said, we want a king because all the other tribes have a king. Go read about this in 1 Samuel. We want a king. We want a king. He says, you don't want a king. They're like, why don't we want a king? And God tells through a prophet Samuel, because the king will take all your money and take all your stuff and a bunch of people will die and he won't always be good. And they were like, well, okay. And he's like, you're going to pick that over me? I want to be your king. And they picked it. And so there was idols being worshipped. Foreign gods. And then one of those kings, the third one of those kings, Solomon, he brought in foreign gods into the temple. And so the promised land, now we're worshiping other gods. God's going, why do you want that so you can go do that? You missed the whole point of this. They dethroned God. They put a king on a throne and said, God, you're not our king. And they worshiped other idols. And this is what happened when they got into the promised land. The funny part about this, I know this is a little bit kind of layered, but when the Israelites left slavery and they went into the desert, you would think those would be the bad times, right? The worst times. They were in the desert after they got out of the Red Sea and the whole kind of traveling through and they got the commandments. They worshiped false gods, and so they were actually cursed, and they had to live and travel around in that land, in that peninsula, if you will, for 40 years before they would go into the actual promised land. So they had these desert days, and in that time, they're supposed to be developing their relationship with God. And ironically, when you look at Israel's desert days, 40 years, and then when they go into the promised land, the exact same thing happened. Israel's desert days were marked by war and death. They were marked with confusion, idol worship, and a dethroning of God. And so, what is the point? Anyone that's looking for a destination to be kind of the beginning of life is going to be, I'm sorry to tell you, you are going to be extremely let down by the circumstances of life. And if you don't take a minute and look at where you are and what's happening right now and who God is right now, you're missing out on all that God has for you. All of it is right now. All of it is here. All of it is in this moment with this God who loves you and says he'll be with you. Moses was promised the same things that Abraham was promised, but then if you read in the scriptures, in the book of Deuteronomy, we find out that Moses disobeyed God through getting water one time. He smacked this rock. And because of that, he was not allowed to go into the promised land. And so at the end of Moses' life, there's this part where he goes up to this mountain called Nebo, and he looks over all of Canaan, the promised land. And he sees it all from north to south and as far as he can look at it. And he's not allowed to go in there. And God tells him this. He says, then the Lord said to him, this is the land I promised on an oath to Abraham, a location, Isaac and Jacob, when I said, I will give it to your descendants. So God's keeping his promise. I'm giving it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you will not cross over into it. You'll not cross over into it. So it's like, wait a minute, you made a promise that we were gonna get land, and yeah, I know you're with me, and yeah, I know, but don't you feel like if you were him at that moment, you'd be like, but God, you promised, you're a God of promise. And I think that Moses had that moment when he goes, hey, go up to the mountain, go look over the land of Canaan, and I want you to see it, and you're not gonna be able to go into it. And I think that Moses had the moment, just like we all do in the car, just like we all do in life, but wait a minute, you promised, I thought we were gonna get there, that's when life is gonna start, that's what it's all about. And I think that he had that moment where he goes, but God, you know that moment where you say, don't give me any more lip, boy? I mean, I had one recently. If you say one more thing, the Xbox is gone forever. When I say forever, I mean hidden somewhere. You won't have the code. I mean, like, I think that Moses had that moment where he's like, wait a minute, the promise. And then he had this, whoosh, this flash of the day that God met him. And the day that God engaged him on the side of a mountain in the burning bush, which we talked about last week. And in that moment, Moses asked God, who was present in the form of a bush that was consumed, or it was on fire but not consumed. Who are you? He says, who are you? The Israelites are gonna ask who sent me. The Egyptian leaders are gonna ask who sent me. And he says, who are you? And God speaks to Moses in that moment, his name, and he says this to him. He says, I am who I am. I am who I am. Now, when we hear that, it just sounds kind of elusive. It sounds tricky. It sounds kind of foggy. But in the Hebrew, I am who I am is a word, Yahweh, and it's a verb. It's not a noun. It's a verb. It's an action tense oriented word. So just back up for a second. Who are you? And he says, Yahweh. And when he hears Yahweh, what Moses hears is not, I'm the God of destination. I'm the God of taking you to a new place. I'm the God of giving you what you think you need where you want it. What he hears when he hears, I am who I am, is he hears a verb word that says this, the God of the journey, the God of action, the God of movement, the God of strength, the God of relationship, the God of dynamic, the God of walking, the God of moving. And we think of God as someone who is living his life to pick us up and take us and place us somewhere. And when Moses asked God, who are you? He said, I'm the God of the journey. And translated three different ways this author talks about how this can be perceived, these three different ideas, that I am who I am could mean the one who causes all things to be and who creates all things, God of action. The one who caused things. Who are you? I'm the one who makes things. I'm a creator. I design things. I move. I shift. I'm a God of activity. Another one is this, none of your business. You can't control me by evoking my name. God basically does his LeBron James flex. Who are you? Sorry, I know I'm gonna get in trouble for doing this. Did you see that thing after LeBron made that three, like the third one, the fourth quarter, and then he went. This is he was doing playing God. He was just playing the king right there. Who are you? None of your business. You. Verb word, you can't control me. You can't put shackles on me. You can't say words and make me do what you want me to do. I'm a God who's elusive and moving and powerful, and you don't understand me and you never will, and that's who I am. And the third one is this, and this is powerful. Who are you? The God of the journey. The God of the journey, the one who makes stuff, the one who can't be shackled and trapped and told what to do and manipulated. And the third one that I am can mean is this: I will be there with you. I will be there with you. Who are you? I am who I am, and I will be with you. What does that mean? That means that I'm a moving, action-oriented God, and wherever my people go, I am with them. I'm with them, I'm next to them, I'm by them, I'm for them, I'm talking to them, I'm walking with them. Moses, I will be with you. So just flash back, Mount Nebo, look at this land. You're never gonna go into it, but wait a minute. What has this all been like? What has this journey been like? And then the author in Deuteronomy, right towards the end, right after Moses dies, says this. And I think it's moving. I think it's special. I think it shows us what we're supposed to know about the God who we serve and love. Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew what? Face to face. Who did all those signs and wonders the Lord sent him to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all of his officials and to his whole land, for no one has ever shown the mighty power or performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all Israel. And Moses sits on Mount Nebo and goes, you did it. You were with me the whole time. We did powerful things. You walked with me. You gave me power. You gave me leadership. You never left me, God. And whether I get to go into the promised land or not doesn't matter because I have you. And God, life is not about going home. It's about knowing God. And I know you face to face. And it's not about ending up in this place called home or this place called heaven or this place with no problems or the place with no pain. It is all about me, God, being with you. Home is with him. The journey is about knowing God every moment. Life is not about getting somewhere. It's about getting God. And my friends, you have him. He is with you right now, right here. Growing up, I went on these bus rides and I went on these camp trips. And I'll never forget, I went to Young Life Camp and we got on a bus and there was 90 of us on a smelly bus, and the speaker system worked. And so they jammed the greatest song of all time by Hanson, Mbop. And I am not kidding you, we stood up in the aisleways of that bus, grabbing the side, shake, Mbop, and I don't remember anything about camp. Because I was with my friends, and we were singing, and we were in the moment. And in that moment, it wasn't about when do we get there. It was about life feels a lot like this. My friends, he is with you right now. He will never be more with you this side of eternity. It doesn't get more with you. When you know God and you follow God, he's with you fully in his full capacity right now. No matter what pain, no matter what problems, no matter what your circumstances are, he never, ever leads you. I am who I am. I am the God of action. I heard it said recently that when you feel a moment in your life, when you feel like God isn't present, it's evidence that at one point you know he was. Right? You know, you feel his presence. He's moved, you've been moved, and then you don't feel his presence. And you feel, God, where did you go? And I promise you that when those things happen, he didn't go anywhere. It's just life, and it's just scary, and it's just dark, and it's just hard. And he wants us to cry out to him and know him and follow him and live with him. And I just wonder, what it would be like if every person in this room believed that God was with them right now, right here, that he's with you right now, just in this room, just his presence, just the presence of God. You know, the word I am is a Hebrew word, Yahweh, and it's all consonants. And when you say it in Hebrew, it just sounds like breathing. Yahweh. Almost like God is saying, I'm breath, I'm life. And if you think about your breath, it's with you. Every breath you take, the presence of God Almighty. And I pray that you don't hope for some destination to bring the breath of God when he is telling you today that he's been with you the whole time. I hope that your heart isn't landed on some destination and that you see that when God called his family together with Abraham as the beginning and the father, and he said, I'm going to be with you. We're going to do a song, and one of my favorite quotes by a great songwriter is John Lennon. He said it this way, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans. My friends, like, can you just be present? You know, psychology today said that the number one remedy for practicing presence, because our brain is wired to learn and to plan, is to focus on your breathing. Isn't that amazing? Yahweh, the presence of God, to focus on your what? On your breathing. The presence of God is the way that you stay present. If you believe that the Holy Spirit of the living God was in you, with you, through you, all the time, and it was embodied supernaturally, directly through your breathing, and you knew every breath I take is me speaking to God and living for God and being next to God and God being with me, wouldn't you be able to focus on the moment a little more? And so I just want everyone to just take a minute, and would you just breathe? It's like iPhone watch moment. Just like, would you do this right now? I mean, would you just, this sounds crazy, but I want us to focus on right now for a minute. And would you just do this? Would you just breathe with me 3 seconds in and 3 seconds out? Let's just do it right now. Ready? Just do it again. Don't think about where you're heading after this. Just breathe. Do it again. Don't think about the past. Don't think about your pain. Don't think about your problems. Don't think about your fears. Just breathe. Just do it again. Ready? The presence of the living God. He's here. Worship is acknowledging the presence of God. When you use your voice to declare truth and remind yourself of who he is. So would you guys all just stand up with me? And I want to pray with you. And we are going to sing a song about the goodness of God. And I want the goodness of God to move into this very central idea. And that is that a good God is here. And he's with us. And he loves us. So let's just take a minute and let's pray. Father, we acknowledge your presence. Forgive us for putting our minds in the past and in the future, and help us to know that you are our God fully now, as much as you will ever be. And that, Father, you called us away from the wheel and you moved us into a life that represents your benevolent love and dependence upon you. And no matter what happens, you're here. You're with us. Help us not to get our hopes up on a promised land, but to enjoy you and your full presence right now.